So I'd like to start by introducing myself. I'm Deepika Yeragunta. I'm a senior product manager with the Amazon Alexa team, and I'm one of the co-founders for Aspiring Women in Product, along with Nancy Wang and Annie Fogarty here. So the motto for Aspiring Women in Product is that we wanted to create a small community where I think a lot of women in different roles in product management could find growth opportunities, and both in trying to get a job and also once you get a job, how to grow in your job. We are currently filing for our nonprofit status, and we should have that soon. And this is our second event, so I'm very excited to see a great turnout. And with that, I would like to introduce my panelists here. Navya Gupta and Amanda and Sally Chang. So I'm going to read out their bios because they're quite meaty and I think everyone should know what their growths are. So Navya is the VP of Product at Peak, responsible for scaling the marketplace known as the Open Table for the $100 billion activities market. Prior to Peak, she ran product at StyleSeat, the world's largest marketplace for beauty services that fueled over $3 billion in beauty services. She has also built large-scale products at Uber, Disney, and Goldman Sachs. Navya holds an electronics engineering degree from the University of Sheffield, UK, a master's in computer science from Stanford, and an MBA from NYU Stern. Welcome, Navya.
I guess you can speak.
Thanks, everyone. Excited to be here. Really looking forward to talking to all of you.
Awesome. Next, we have Amanda. Amanda is a group product manager on Google Maps, driving the overall user experience for the Android, iOS, and web apps. She joined the team 7 years ago and at this point has worked on most parts of the product, including search, driving navigation, personalization, map rendering, growth, and core app UI. Wow. Prior to app, she worked in the ads org at Google, focused on customer service tools and international payment options. She holds a bachelor's in computer science and engineering from the University of Pennsylvania. Thanks.
Yeah. I'm excited to chat with you guys today. Yeah.
Lastly, but not the least, we have Sally here. Sally is a product manager at Facebook on the business platforms team. Prior to her current role, she was a monetization product marketing manager at Facebook on the direct response and commerce team. She transitioned into tech after attending business school at the Stanford GSB. Before graduate school, she had a strategy focus working in strategy consulting and on the strategy and consumer insights team at Coach. She has a management science and engineering degree from Stanford University. Sally is an avid runner, 7 half marathons, currently training for the Big Sur Marathon in April. Good luck. Fitness enthusiast and major foodie. Awesome. Welcome, Sally.
Glad to be here.
Okay, so with that, I think you obviously know that we have a very diverse panel here. And that was one of the intentions of having different speakers from different backgrounds. Clearly, we have very illustrious companies, Google, Facebook, and Peak.com. And a very, very interesting backgrounds, primarily because of each of the journeys that they've undertaken. Some are from very core technical backgrounds and some from a business background, but have done a varied number of things before they got here. And I think as we go through the number of questions, I want to kind of have some attention and focus brought to that. So towards the end of this panel, we'll have about 20 minutes to ask Q&A, and I'm hoping that some of the speakers will stick around after so that you'll have an opportunity to interact one-on-one if you need to. Okay, great, thank you.
Okay,
so we'll do it very, very simply. So the first, I think, question is, let's talk about how you got into product management. So how did you get your first role in PM?
Yeah, so right out of school, I joined Wall Street as an engineer, which was a very non-conventional move, especially at Stanford. People were all my friends were going to Google and the Facebooks of the world. But I just had a feeling that I wanted to be in New York and I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to be in tech per se. And I look back and I question if it was a good decision at that time. But I also met my now husband, that time fiance, and we both wanted to just live in New York. And that was great. We did that. I was an engineer. Very quickly into my engineering career, I realized that I'm a terrible engineer. And studying at Stanford and doing computer science, I already had that feeling, but it was just validated very quickly. And that was, I would say, my turning point into product. It was a very natural transition to get into product because I could focus on the things that I really like to do and still have to do some coding and still be able to keep up. So I would say my real transition into it started at Goldman, but happened when I came back to the Valley a couple of years ago. And that's when I saw the struggle of getting into product, explaining people that my experience was relevant for product. Product and talking about how I could add value. On top of that, people in the Valley hate finance and they blame Goldman for all the problems in the world. And even my MBA wasn't really helping because people thought I wasn't technical enough, even with a computer science master's degree. So I would say I ran into the obstacles which a number of you here have heard about. So I feel the pain. And we'll talk a little bit more about the journey, but I would say it is hard, and I just want to acknowledge it. It is hard to get into product.
So I probably came through the most traditional route. So I was studying computer science, and I was kind of starting to apply for internships, assuming I was going to apply for engineering internships. And I had a friend who had, through the Women in Computer Science group, who had done a product internship at Microsoft the summer before. And she was kind of talking to me about it, and I was like, oh, that kind of sounds cool. Like, that sounds like something I would like to do. And so I started talking to her. She put me in contact with the recruiters, did all the interviews, stuff like that, and ended up getting the role. So I spent my first summer there, and that kind of solidified it for me. Like, yeah, no, this is what I want to do. And so I kind of just got another internship the next year and kind of pursued that full time. It's funny, I was at Penn, so everybody in my class was all going to Goldman Sachs and all the New York finance places. So it was actually a little bit of an anomaly to want to come out to Silicon Valley.
So I think that one of the interesting parts is, like, when you're in a finance school, to actually go into an engineering tech world is the anomaly, and vice versa for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you, Sally?
So I really wanted to do product management after going to business school. So to start, as Devika explained, like, I had a really different background before going to business school and going to product management. I worked in retail. I did strategy consulting. And when I was trying to find jobs in business school, I worked with, they have just a really, really great career center there. I literally sat with my counselor, Grace, like, week after week. And we were talking about, like, what I want to do, like, what is my dream job? And kept on landing, like, product manager at Facebook. I applied. They would not even interview me. They're like, sorry, we don't take anyone without a CS degree or without electrical engineering. Your degree, although you have an engineering degree, it's just not technical enough. And I could not even get my foot in the door. I did not stop. I tried again. There's a saying, like, if you're on a rocket ship, like, just join and take whatever seat you can get. I interviewed for a number of different roles there and tried to find something that, you know, I could bring my skills from management consulting. I could bring my strategy skills. I interviewed with the product marketing team and I really loved it. We focus a lot on both inbound and outbound marketing there and better understanding, like, what to build and why. And I joined that team. After about a year in, I started having conversations with my manager. I was like, again, like, I'm really interested in product management. It's been an itch of mine. I am really, like, it's something I just really want to try. And again, it was, like, kind of shut down. I was chatting with the PM I worked with. Again, like, felt like I was running into a closed door. I was running into, like, this chicken and egg problem. Like, how do you prove that I can do this when I haven't done it before? And that was something I really struggled with. I realized that I was asking for permission almost before I was able to take on that type of role. And I realized that in my current role, there's a lot more I could be doing. And I think that I had a really big switch in terms of my mindset when before I was thinking, how can I be great in the role that I'm in? And then I switched to, like, how can I really make this product great? How can I make my team great? And that switch, I think, was really important for me to understand, like, what the difference is and, like, how to be a good product manager. I think the best indicator of whether you'll do well in your next role is actually how well you do in your current role. Because when you do a really, really good job, when you knock it out of the park, people, when they're, like, thinking of people to hire in for roles that open up, they'll ask, like, hey, how's Sally? Like, how is she? And if the people who they're talking to are like, she's amazing, she just, like, killed it in this project, like, they're going to think of you when the next role opens up. And if people are like, she did okay, like, not bad, like, it makes a really big difference. So for me, doing really well in roles that I was in, having sponsors, making sure that I was chatting with people who were opening up doors for me and getting that door opened up for me was really important.
That's great. I think that brings me to sort of the next question, which is, were there any mentors that you cultivated along the way? And if they helped you shape your decisions or gave you opportunities, perhaps you can build on what you just spoke about.
Yeah. So when I was first joining Facebook, I actually chatted with a VP of product management in the group. And one of the biggest learnings I had, I was asking her, I was like, Deb, like, since I don't have a technical background, like, what can I bring to the team? She's like, Sally, that mindset that's a dangerous mindset for you to have. Like, you should be asking yourself, like, what unique thing do you have that you can bring to a team and make the product succeed? And I realized, like, a lot of my, like, it's a dangerous mindset to put yourself into, like, a box almost, and to not to limit yourself. VP of product, like, she has been amazing, and she's been, like, such a mentor and sponsor for me, and she's been someone who I go to again and again when I need advice and when I am just, like, want to talk through things. And she's been amazing throughout my career. Like, she literally helped open up doors for me, and I think, like, definitely would not have been able to be where I am today without her.
What about any of your school alumni? Did you reach out to anybody during your product management course?
I did. Everyone's, like, super open, like, willing and happy to chat with you. I think that was something that was really helpful as well. I definitely think that having Deb as a sponsor was probably the biggest piece of my transitioning.
Amanda, do you want to touch upon the same thing? Did you cultivate any mentors along the way?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I've gotten pretty lucky in terms of having a couple really great managers that also really acted as sponsors. So when I started out on the team, I started out as an associate products manager, so straight out of school. And, you know, my first manager did a really great job of kind of helping me find new opportunities, find ways to grow my scope, help me really grow into the product management role such that I could take on something larger. So I think that was really helpful, kind of having that sponsorship from the beginning. I think I've also had a lot of, I've had a lot of other good mentors that I've met through just different events, different networking, you know, mostly at Google, that I kind of keep in touch with and go back to for specific questions. But I'd say I also lean a lot on kind of my peer network as, you know, kind of mentors as well. You know, I think it's really, for us, it's been really interesting. There's kind of a group of, you know, maybe 6 or 8 women that we all started working in product around the same time. So it's actually been really interesting to have that group and be able to just talk through a lot of the challenges that we're going through, kind of the typical, like, oh, this is really hard for me, and seeing that, oh, it's actually hard for everybody. This is not just something unique to me. And so that's actually been something really powerful for me, too, is having that kind of peer group where we kind of mentor each other. And I think that's been really, really helpful.
I love that. I think I just went through a job interview search, and one of the biggest things for me was being able to bounce off and have your friends even ask questions and get responses and figure out how to actually interview better. And I think your friends are very good at critiquing you as well, so that helps a lot.
I also find it's interesting for me too, when I feel like I can give my friends advice and then I'm like, I should really listen to that myself. It's like much easier for me to say it to somebody else than for me to be like, oh, no, that's actually exactly what I need to do as well.
That's awesome. What about you, Navya?
I would say the person who was most instrumental in helping me getting my first product job was my manager's manager at Goldman. When I told him I want to move back to California, he said, you can keep your job. and while you figure out what you want to do next. And I thought that was a really great luxury to be able to look for a job while having a job. His only ask was that I give him 6 weeks notice when I decide to leave. And I gave him 8 weeks, which was totally fine. I think having that was really helpful. And then along the way, as I've switched between companies, I've stayed in touch with my old bosses. And they've been my point of contact every time I wanted to make a decision, right? So every time I had a job offer or two, and I'm thinking about all the criteria, I would go back to my old bosses who know me really well. And then knowing Deepika, and Deepika is great at organizing dinners for women in product. I think that's been a great source to meet other women too who are in product, and getting their feedback on presentations or getting product advice. So a lot of times when I meet my product friends for dinner, I show them where I work. I show them peak.com and get them to give me product critique. And they love to do that. They absolutely love to do that. She gave me tons of feedback and she helped me find bugs too. So yeah.
So, I guess I have the mic, so here. Actually, so switching gears a little bit, I feel, I think a lot of people here are new PMs, and one of the things that I want to touch upon is, what are some of the common mistakes? I know you guys have been in your careers for a while now, but if you can think back to what you've observed, some of the common mistakes that new PMs tend to make, and you know how to like circumvent that when you see it happening. If there are any tips that you want to pass on?
Yeah, I think it's similar to what Sally said, which is putting personal growth before product growth, right? So what is in it for me? Am I getting the right attention? Am I going to get the credit if this works really well? And it's something that I've seen that's pretty common for new PMs. And instead of that, if the focus is more shifted towards the product and saying, what is absolutely everything that I can do? Am I exhausting every idea, every resource that I have to make the product successful? I think that's a mental shift that really helps.
Yeah, I would say one big thing that I've seen is waiting for permission. It's kind of similar to what you were saying. I think a lot of really great PMs look for the problem and then go figure out how to solve it. And if you wait for someone to come to tell you, like, oh, go solve this problem, you're probably missing out on a lot of opportunities. So I think being kind of a self-starter, being able to look around and say, hey, yeah, this is the most important thing that needs to happen for the product right now, and just going and doing it, I think makes for really successful PMs.
So a lot of people tell me they want to become a PM because they want to be CEO of the product. They want to make all the decisions and like pass along all their really smart decisions to their team and then like have it perfectly executed. I think that is just so totally different from my experience. As a PM, I'm literally doing everything needed to unblock my team. If it is the most menial thing of like scheduling meetings and like making sure I have spreadsheets put together and like making sure like if there's something missing, if there's a gap, I'm the one going in and doing it. Like it is not necessarily pretty at times, and it is not necessarily like the most glamorous of jobs. The second thing, it's like, not me making the decision half the time. It's like me convincing others that this is the way that we should go and making sure that we are guiding the ship in a direction where it's not like headed towards a cliff. It's a big boat and I can only do so much to move it, but I'm going to make sure it's moving in the right direction. That's the way I see, like, that's what I think is most important for my role. And it is not necessarily me. I am helping drive the ship, but I'm without everybody on it, like the boat would not move. I think the last thing is everyone like expects to have control, like be the CEO, but you still play like a really big role in influence, and you have to convince the rest of your team that this is what to do. And you have to give them vision and provide them with a vision going forward. And it's not that they may not agree with the way you see things. So a lot of times it's figuring out how to work with your team to get there and to like move the ship forward.
Great. So I think like one of the questions that I want to ask is, in terms of qualities of PMs, you have, all three of you have had an opportunity to work with great PMs. You yourself are like, you know, you made a few mistakes, might have learned something about yourself that you perhaps changed over the way. What are some of the good qualities that you think are there in the best PMs that everybody should embody?
I think having really strong vision and product strategy, going back to what I was saying before, I think not being afraid to admit that you're wrong is really, it's sometimes really hard for every PM that I've worked with. But the best PMs are able to take every single piece of information, like everything that they learn, and like even be able to admit that they had seen things wrong the way they were thinking before, and to repivot. A lot of times, like, it's scary to change directions. I've been in my current role for 3 months. We've changed directions 3 times. Yeah. And every time I'm still like really scared. I'm like, God, like, is it just because I don't know how to lead a team? Is it because I'm like, didn't think up the right thing the first time? It is very, very normal to change, but it's how you lead and how you guide a team through a big change or a big pivot that makes a big difference.
Yes, yeah, a lot of influencing skills, mm-hmm. and getting them to see why you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some of the best leaders I see, like, again, going back to the ship example, if your ship is sinking, really, really good PMs are able to like, calm everyone down and help everyone figure out what to do to like fix the boat and get it going again. There are some PMs that freak out and some that like just are like, oh my God, the ship is sinking. I don't know what to do. And like, I find myself in that moment a lot of times still, but it is really important like to be calming and to like make sure even when you feel like you're like about to drown, like everyone knows what they have to do to get the boat back up again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's all really, really great. You know, I would add to that, you know, I think PMs who really just try to get things done for the product. You know, I think as you said, there can be a lot of times where, you know, you're kind of not entirely sure which direction you're going in, or there's some, you know, maybe some turmoil or chaos going on, and PMs that can just be like, all right, cool. That's what we need to get. This is what we need to do. This is the first step. Let's move towards that. And then, you know, over time, be able to build up the, okay, and this is where we're all going, and try to build up that broader picture to get everybody on board. So I think really people that can just kind of dig into things and go do whatever it takes to make the product excellent. You know, whether that's, as you said, like whether that's scheduling meetings or it is getting the three engineers who disagree on, you know, what technical decision we should make for this product that's going to come back and bite us in 6 months if we don't agree on it right now. You know, kind of seeing that and orchestrating that solution, or like I've gone to In-N-Out for my team as we've approached big deadlines, like whatever needs to get done, being that person that's willing to fill in that gap while trying to steer the broader ship.
Great adaptability. Every company is different. Every team in a company is different. And as a PM, you're filling in those gaps, right? So you could be the person who's actually doing marketing and writing copy. You could be the data analyst for the team. Hopefully you're not the engineer or the designer. But you do fill in a lot of roles, and you should be willing to do that happily. The other thing is being strategic. So everybody around you is thinking day to day. When you do your scrums, the only thing on your engineer's mind is what's on today and maybe what's tomorrow. But you're thinking a month ahead. You're thinking 3 months ahead. You're thinking where your product is going and seeing the forest through the trees.
So I think we have a big audience of new product management aspirants, and we have some senior PMs. But I think over dinner one day, actually it was Navya who said this to me, and it always stuck with me. She said, every 2 years, I see the same set of people interviewing for PM jobs. And it didn't matter that, you know, most of the people at the dinner that night were vice presidents of product management in various companies and were senior leaders already. But it always felt like we're always interviewing. So I think this goes into the interview mode. And I want to ask, like, what advice would you give to somebody who's just about going to interview right now? In for job interviews, are there specific resources they should be looking at? How should they think about preparation, and how much time should they put into this? Any advice there?
Yeah, so I've looked for jobs when I've had a job, and I've looked for jobs when I did not have a job. And I found that the more time that I had to prepare, the better the outcome was. So if I had more time, the things I would focus on then that have been helpful for me is getting to know the product inside out, getting to know the business inside out, basically stalking every senior person in the company, seeing which panel they were at, and listening to the things that are on top of their mind and the things they value, right? So the more you get to know the people. I've walked into interviews where I basically just knew that person because I've watched like 20 interviews and read every tweet that he had. But I think that's been really helpful for me even to know where I don't want to be. Right. And this diligence definitely pays off. So do your homework. Be prepared to bring your best self to the interview and then ask a lot of good questions. I think I interview people all the time and I hear the common easy questions that people are asking. I really value the last 15 minutes in the interview where I give the chance to people to ask me questions. And that's my interviewing time too, because I'm judging people based on the questions they're asking, because it actually shows how much interest you have in the company and how much homework you've done, right? So you want somebody who actually understands your pain points and wants to know more and wants to be a partner through that.
Yeah, I would say when I do interviewing, one of the things that I look for is really kind of enthusiasm around solving product problems. So, you know, when we talk about, you know, a well-designed product or, you know, something that's poorly designed, or, you know, kind of any of those typical product interview questions, like you can kind of tell the difference between someone who has just like studied this, you know, wrote from a book, and someone who's like really excited to think about it and excited to work through the problem and is kind of coming up with different ideas and evaluating them on the fly and then trying to dig in. And you often have to like cut those people off to move on to your next question because you're kind of just full and excited. So I would say, you know, really think, and I think that's actually a good marker too for someone who's going to really enjoy the PM role, because I think, as you know, you're kind of talking about, like, it's not always the most glamorous role in reality. Like, there's a lot of stuff that you have to deal with as a PM. And so I think, you know, the people that I find do the best in the role tend to be ones that are just super passionate about building awesome products. And so, you know, I don't know that it's kind of hard to prepare for, I think, but it's something to think about. And like, how do you think about just products in your everyday life? What are the different things you would change about them? How do you think about how they, you know, why are they interesting products? Why are they successful? What are the kind of broader market forces that go into it? You know, why this product and not that product? And just kind of having that curiosity and that interest in why things work like they do and why companies set things up like they did, and what you think they might have done better. For me, that's like a really interesting signal in product interviews.
I'm going to approach this from a different angle. So if you're just starting off and you're like aspiring to be a PM and you're not yet at the interview stage, a question that I asked, so when I first started thinking about doing PM, and I wasn't really like really sure what the job entailed, I went and asked every single engineer, every single designer, every PM, everyone I worked with, like, who do you think is a really good PM here and why? And I like got them to give, like, and I kept on asking them, like, why? Like, tell me, what are the things they do? Like, what are the things that they think about? What do they help you with? Give me examples of different projects that they've done and different problems they've helped solve. And that really helped me understand like what the role of the PM is and like how I could just try doing that in my daily role. Not necessarily the whole thing, but just like what aspects could I do to see if I even like this and if this is something that I can bring. And the reason I'm sharing this is because if you're not yet a PM, they're going to be asking you like questions about how to be a PM. And it's hard when you don't have a good answer because you haven't had experience being a PM yet. So think about how you can gain experience without necessarily having that title. Before interviewing, I literally went to every single PM I worked with and I asked them, like, can you mock interview me? And I went through hours and hours of interviewing, and not just interviewing, but they would sit down and give me like very candid feedback. Like, this is like what you did well. This is this not good. Don't do that again. So it was really, really helpful just to get that practice and see from different, because everyone PMs differently, and getting everyone's perspective was extremely helpful for me.
That's great. And I think like one of the things that I came across most recently with my interviewing process was, you know, specific companies, Google, I'm looking at you, have like a technical interview as well.
Yep.
How does one go about preparing for a technical interview at Google and, you know,
It's a really good question. Fun fact, I never actually did a technical interview because I went through the internship program. So at the time, they didn't do it. So I like to think I snuck in the back door on that one. You know, I mean, I think a lot of these, you know, it's kind of your typical interview prep. It's, you know, go look up your basic computer science concepts. But, you know, actually, at the end of the day, one of the things that I like to see, you know, and I'm on our hiring committee at Google for product managers. And so one of the things that I like to see in a technical interview, especially for people that have, you know, kind of a different background, maybe didn't come through, you know, a CS program, is, you know, do people admit when they don't know things? And, you know, when the engineer explains, okay, this is vaguely how it works, can they kind of think that through and start to apply it? So it's not about necessarily knowing every CS concept or every algorithm, but it's about how do you think through the problem, and how do you work from, okay, this is the basic idea of how this works, and how do you then apply it? So, you know, I think they've seen a lot of people be really successful when, you know, they say, like, okay, I'm not actually familiar with that concept, but can you give me the 30 seconds of how that works? And okay, let's see if we can work through it. And I think that that tends to go pretty well.
So Navya, I know you're currently looking for a PM. So what qualities are you looking for, and what is your interview process like at Peak?
Yeah, so I would say interviewing, I've looked for people, looked for PMs in different companies, and Peak is at a stage where we're a pretty small product team, right? So it's me, the CTO, who's great, and he did product for 5 years. They actually interviewed people for 2 years before they hired me. So it's been a long, they're very careful about how many product people they bring. So it's just me, the CTO, and one more product manager, right? And I'm looking to bring in one more person. But the level of responsibility is a senior PM's responsibility that we're looking for. So somebody who's done product for 4 years, but at least 4 years, but somebody who's worked on large-scale products. And when I interview people, I'm always curious about the best product experiences they've had. And it doesn't have to be it was a success. It could have been a total failure. But I want to know if people have actually been there on that seat, driving those decisions and leading the team.
I guess one more question I want to ask you is, where do you think that a person can differentiate themselves when they apply for a job? Mm-hmm. Let's say that they don't have some great brand name company that they've, you know, worked at, but they want to apply to Peak or Google or Facebook. What is it that they can do on a separate level to distinguish themselves from the crowd?
Yeah, so I've been reading a lot of cover letters, even though I get a ton of applications, and that's been one source where I look to see the person's interpretation of their own experience. And the more personalized it is, which is, I know about Peak, and here is why I like Peak, and here is how I can add value, is something that I look out for. I also look for special experiences and side projects. So I was reading about this guy who did a avocado delivery thing that went viral. So it got me like looking, because he didn't have any product experience. I was curious, but doing something special where you're showing that you're not just going about your day-to-day job, but also taking on side projects.
Yeah, I would say that's one of the biggest things for me too, is just seeing what are the, you know, particularly for people who want to get into product, like, tell me about what have you been doing to further that? Like, what 20% project have you taken on? What side project? What different areas, you know, kind of your own personal growth are you investing in? And for me, that's always a really good signal that, you know, this person is committed, they're excited, they know what they're getting into. And that's something that definitely differentiates for me.
I haven't interviewed anyone yet, but I would say if I had an answer, it would be people who, similar to what Amanda shared, like people who are really curious. You can tell when people like are really excited and curious and like actually want to solve a problem. And that is like, you can go about and like have the same exact answer, but the spirit and like the charisma and the like excitement in which you answer it is, it can make or break. And like a really, really good candidate has all of that, and that like drive to want to really solve and go through for the product.
So, you know, given that we are aspiring women in product, I think one question I do want to ask you guys is, what's the diversity ratio in your respective companies? I mean, or at least in product teams.
Yeah.
Can you touch upon how Facebook looks at it?
So it's really funny because we literally just had a meeting where we had, I think, about 8 or 9 females of all different ethnicities and two males. So our team is extremely diverse. It is, I think a lot of it is each, in each company, there's like a, within each team, there is a different culture, even within, because Facebook is a very, very large company. So I'd say, like, when you're looking for a different team, like, look for a team that fits in with your, the culture that you want to be a part of. And our team, I've talked about her before, Deb, she is amazing. And I think she is a very, very strong woman leader. And I think that attracts other really strong females who want to move forward in their careers and who like are attracted to a leader who exhibits strength and just amazing charisma and just amazing understanding. She's one of the best leaders I've worked with before. I think people will follow her because she like tells people to follow her, but because she just is such a great natural leader.
Yeah. And I think diversity is obviously hugely important. At Google, we do a bunch of different efforts around different aspects of diversity. And so, like, actually within Geo in particular, we also have a strong female lead, which I think helps. We're looking at a whole bunch of different areas around culture, around career development, around hiring, and around, you know, how our products are actually inclusive for people. So that's been, I think, really interesting to look at and pretty eye-opening when you actually start digging into some of the details and, like, what makes people stay, what makes people enjoy being in the group, and what doesn't.
So I'm excited to say women at Peak are actually here. That's whole section. we have women engineers, marketers. I think given that our CEO is a woman, we do attract a lot of women talent, which is great. Prior to Peak, I was at Styleseat, which is a two-sided beauty marketplace, and that was heavily women too. So the entire product team was women. So I've seen that side as well. And I worked in companies where there were fewer women, and I've realized that the more diversity you have, not just in terms of gender, but in terms of experience and backgrounds, the better outcome that you get.
That's awesome. I have a personal anecdote to share about this, of how important diversity is, not just in gender, but, you know, other things as well. I had a job interview for a VP of product role at a wearable startup. And the startup basically, you put it on your back and it tells you when you slouch. So, correct posture. And so they were pivoting to actually create a product for running and measuring how running was going to work. And as I heard the CEO speak, I said, why wouldn't you use this for cricket? And she said, cricket? What is that? And I said, you know, cricket is outside of America. Everyone knows about cricket. And she said, it's so surprising that you say that because nobody on my team is Indian, so nobody knows much about cricket. And just from a demographic perspective, I think just bringing that perspective, I realized, oh yeah, this is why diversity is important. I want to close out and open it up for Q&A with a very fun question. What is your favorite product and why?
I would do the conventional, I love and use Slack, but I'm actually 6 months pregnant right now, and I'm using a lot of pregnancy apps right now. So I would say, that's actually a product that I would like to work on the side, where I make it easy for working pregnant women to be able to manage the roadmap. I have a roadmap for my pregnancy. Had to. <Of course. laughs> But yeah, that would be my favorite.
I've really been enjoying Headspace lately. So it's an app for kind of meditation and mindfulness. And I think it's very accessible, which I really like. And it makes the whole, you know, kind of idea of getting into meditation and more mindfulness really kind of shows you how to apply it to your day to day. And so I think that's been kind of one of my favorite products right now.
So I think I'm kind of obligated to say Facebook. And it is true because I use it like literally 20 hours a day. But outside of Facebook, I recently started using Strava, and I really like it because it brings together communities of runners, like bikers, swimmers, whatever else you do, your poison of choice. And it really, I haven't seen a fitness app that brings together people as much and creates a social environment. And it's really great. I like it.
Thank you. So with that, I want to open it up for a Q&A. And the only request I have is for you to speak up, just because we are recording this session and I want to make it accessible for whoever is watching it later to hear the question as well. I will repeat the question, but if you can speak up, the other people in the room can hear it as well. So first question. Yeah.
So I'm currently interviewing right now, and I find that it's a little troublesome to keep having to convince recruiters to let me talk to the hiring manager. How do you convince recruiters that you have what it takes to talk to the hiring manager?
So the question is, sorry, let me repeat.
It's like a barrier, you know, half the time. I get to talk to the hiring manager, but it's a small team or a small company. But then other times, all the recruiter that I have to convince that, please, just let me talk.
The question is, how do you bypass the recruiter to talk to the hiring manager? I mean, just bypass the recruiter for a small company, I would say. In bigger companies, I'm sure that the response would be different. But I'm totally good with people reaching out to me directly. People do that all the time on AngelList, on LinkedIn. And what I would say is, if you have a non-conventional background where you know especially a recruiter is going to cut you off and you have a strong passion for the product, show that passion to the hiring manager outside of like showing up to the door. But I would strongly encourage doing that. Personally, I don't mind it, and I know that a lot of people won't.
What are some of the ways you think that they can show passion for the product?
Yeah, so I mean, having a personalized cover letter, right? And then I've done presentations before for the companies that I wanted to be at, and actually putting a vision document with a big disclaimer that you guys have thought about this problem longer than I have, but here are some of the things from the outside that I'm seeing that could be important for you. And I've done that at times that when I'm not even asked to put that together, to show that you really are interested in the product.
I would say leverage your network as much as possible. Like, if there is a friend who knows the hiring manager, like, reach out to your friend, ask if they can make an intro. I think that generally helps. An intro really helps a lot, and it goes a long way. And people are just much more receptive to chatting with you if they know a friend that you know, if you have something in common.
I think what's worked for me in the past is when I reach out on LinkedIn and ask for like a 10-minute conversation, nobody says no to 10 minutes. They have to be really cruel to say that. So at least there's some amount of guilt you can play on. But if you don't waste any time and you get to the point quickly, then I think that's usually pretty helpful. So, yeah. Next question.
So I'm an APM with MI. Team is super senior, and I just would love your sort of advice on, you know, you talk a lot about persuasion and how to persuade people who have way, way more experience than you, and you're trying to kind of convince them, you know, and draw efficient.
You're an APM where?
At BetterUp.
At BetterUp.
Yeah, so the question was, how do you convince people when you're, you know, kind of just starting out on a team or junior working with people that are more senior than you? And I know this is easier said than done, but don't think about it. You know, I think actually, like, one of the great things about tech is it's really about the ideas and about, you know, what you bring to the team, and it's not usually about your seniority. And so really thinking about, okay, so why is this the way why is this the direction we should go in? What data do I have that supports this? What research do I have? And then, you know, for me, I find the best way for influence in any situation is to find key people that you can get bought in early. So, you know, you have the one colleague who you're like, yep, we're on the same page, get them bought in early, pitch the idea to them. And then you can kind of grow that into more and more people. And then you eventually figure out who the people that are, you know, kind of holdouts there, and you can take different tactics there. But for me, it's really about just trying to really set the vision of where are we going, why, and what data do I have that backs that? And then you're kind of having a lot of one-on-one conversations to start socializing that idea.
All right. Who here has heard of imposter syndrome? Who here has felt imposter syndrome? I think a lot of what I heard just now, like, it feels like you have felt imposter syndrome at time. Like, okay, there's people in here who have had years of experience who are, like, so much smarter than me. But, you know, you are the product manager. You have thought about it for so many hours, so much deeply than anybody else in the room, regardless of how many years of experience. Like, it is your baby, right? And you're doing whatever you can do to make sure this baby grows up. I think I definitely still struggle with that too. And actually, like, in the last product review I had, the piece of feedback that I got was like, Sally, it seemed like you were asking for permission to do, like, what you had proposed. Like, don't come into a room asking for permission. Like, if you feel like you should build something, like, go and build it. Like, lead your team. And that was just such good feedback for me, because I felt like I needed to get permission again. And, like, that I couldn't move forward without someone smarter or someone with more experience giving me the go-ahead. Again, it's, like, back to that dangerous mental model. Like, instead of saying, like, gosh, these people in this room are so smart, like, how do I convince them where to go? It's more like, they should be listening to you, because you know what to do. You just got to make sure that you, like, present yourself in that way. I think the other, like, helpful thing is, a lot of times, for a really important meeting where you have to, like, convince a lot of people to go in a certain direction, I tend to pull people aside. Like, I pull aside my eng manager, I pull aside my tech lead. If I know there's some engineer who, or someone who, like, doesn't agree with me at all, I'll meet with them and spend, like, an hour chatting with them to convince them before that meeting. So even before there's a meeting, I know how it's going to go, because I've already spent hours making sure everyone is bought into the vision and the decision that the meeting, them calling the meeting to come, them calling the meeting to decide.
So general advice and a specific advice. So general would be to build trust one person, one day, one project at a time, right? So people will remember you for the work that you've done. And if you've been there a month, people will still remember the things that you've done in the 1 month. So take that seriously on how you're building trust. And more specific advice about getting buy-in. What I've noticed is, when I go into meetings where we have to make a tough decision, it's sometimes figuring out ahead of time what the concerns are, but also going into meetings not with an agenda. Like, it would be a victory if we decide on X, right? And keeping it more open-ended, where everybody can come in and share their point of view. And so it becomes a collective exercise to make a decision. And in that process, you're winning people over, because they're deciding everything with you. They're sharing their pros and cons, and you get to the journey together. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of blocks. The question is, what are the gaps that you've seen filling as a product manager? And you've probably heard people say a PM is a janitor, right? You're just doing all the dirty work. But it's actually true. On a day-to-day, you're like, you're not caring about your title. Like, all you care about is if the job gets done, it's a success, right? And hopefully you're not sweeping floors. But it could be, the gaps I would say are, for example, right now, I'm doing partner outreach every single day. I'm calling our customers, because we don't have a user research person. I'm doing that myself. I obviously do my, because we don't have a PM, I'm writing my own requirements. We do QA at times ourselves. You're hopefully not writing code, but staying technical enough and working with the engineers if you're working with a junior engineer. I've had PMs who've done paid marketing themselves. So they had a product that was great. It just wasn't, we didn't have a marketing person. They would run Facebook ads themselves. So basically not saying no every time there's a need. And if you don't have the right skill set, then obviously escalating it to say, if I could learn how to run Facebook ads for about 6 months, but I'll burn $50,000 of cash, probably not the best idea. So not doing things like that.
Yeah, I mean, so working at, you know, Google, and I have a fairly well-staffed team at this point, so that's actually kind of cool. But over time, you know, it's exactly similar. Like, I've run my own usability studies. I've written all of the blog posts and all of the PR comms. You know, I've done all of the milestone tracking and spreadsheeting and, you know, just the nitty gritty. Actually, I find myself doing that even more as I get into a more senior role, because everybody else is actually working on core product things. I'm like, all right, I guess I might make myself useful. So, you know, or, you know, like today what I was doing was trying to find a time for six execs to meet because two admins were out. And so I was like, well, I need this meeting to happen. So, you know, trying to get the team unblocked by getting a decision made. So I think it's a lot of, you know, just kind of really seeing what is the next roadblock on the team and how do I remove it.
Yeah.
Another question? Yes.
Hi, thanks so much for being here. I'm someone who's exploring whether or not a PM role is right for me. So curious to know what are the typical career growth paths or trajectories that someone can take part in? Is it just going all the way to the chief of product or do you can work in other functions?
Sadly, I think you have the best answer.
People move all around. I think that there's examples of people moving from different roles within Facebook, like people move from different roles to PM, people move out of PM into different roles. There's a lot of movement and a lot of people are just interested in pursuing things that are exciting to them. And there's a lot of encouragement for that. Like people are really happy. My management experience, my managers have been super supportive of me and like have tried to talked with me at length around like where my career is going and how I could move into different roles or like just even chatting through why I want to do different roles.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I think there's at Google it's very similar. Like people jump around all the time, and I think, you know, I've seen actually people jump up and down quite a bit. So, you know, you'll see someone who was a product director on, you know, a team running a team of 60 PMs at Google, and then they go jump to a small little kind of incubator effort, and they're, you know, they're back down to being the PM on the team and running that. So I think there's a lot of difference in, you know, at least at a large company, there's kind of a lot of difference on, you know, are you the individual contributor PM on the ground, or are you managing a team of PMs? And so, you know, I think it's interesting. It's not always a linear, just straight up. People kind of can jump back and forth too, between kind of that more management role and the more kind of on the ground PM role.
Navya, I think in startups, probably your experience is quite different, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of flexibility to move around. In my last job, I helped a few people get into product from different functions like sales and operations. And my biggest advice here is to shadow a PM as much as possible. So this person who used to do operations and really wanted to just do product, and every day she'll open a SQL book and know that that's the one thing that's going to help her. I actually had her go and start attending scrums, like just stand next to your engineers, your PMs, and see what they're talking about. Okay, and then start going into sprint planning sessions. Just sit there and watch people talk about user stories and see if you really want to be that person who's writing those stories. And I know for that person it was, I want to do this, I love every aspect of product, but I've actually had people who said this is too much work and it's not worth it. Like I've had engineers who moved into product and really hated being a product person because like you just have a better life as being an engineer. So like I mean, it depends on from company to company, but see as much as you can to shadow a person before figuring out if that's what you want to do.
I think to build on what Navya just said, one of the things that I find is if you like a company, I think just getting into the company in a role that you're already familiar with might be an easy entry, and then from there you can make your way into product. But don't like underestimate the fact that you even got into the company, and that could be a great first step that you can take. Mm-hmm. So I've often found that, you know, that becomes a barrier. I want a product role in this company for sure. Shouldn't be an obstacle, I think. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. It's great to have you. I would like to ask about the hard skills that are required in companies in the Bay Area, especially, on the panel today, there's a lot of software products you guys are building. So is CS background and also the requirement to get into the product in the software companies?
Yeah, I personally don't look for a technical background. It is a plus. But what I personally care about is the experience you've had. So if you've had no technical experience, but you've built large-scale product, that's a plus. But essentially, technical background helps you have intelligent conversations with engineers, and you can prove that either through a degree, but I think more importantly, you can prove it through your projects. Like, I have an electrical engineering degree, and I should not be near circuits at all. So that's something that I don't look at.
Yeah, I would say, you know, for big companies, there can be, you know, kind of the recruiter line of, you know, this is something we look for, and it's just kind of a filtering thing. Though I think at Google, we're trying to do that less and less because we realize it definitely limits the diversity of backgrounds and the diversity of perspectives that we can bring in. So I know we're looking at that less. So for me, it's really about, yeah, how do you think about the technical aspects, and are you willing to learn? So actually probably the two strongest PMs on my team right now don't have technical backgrounds, but I would call them probably two of the most technical PMs that work on my team. Like, they're really comfortable doing data analysis. They're really comfortable, you know, kind of talking with engineers. Like one of my non-technical PMs who actually recently moved from marketing, she's actually running the like engineering productivity team right now, which is like the most technical group, and she's doing a great job, and the engineers really respect her. So for me, it's really, can you build that respect with the engineering team, and can you talk their language, and can you kind of understand what's going to be hard, what's going to be easy, what makes their lives easier, what makes their lives harder, and less about the, you know, kind of rote, do you have a CS degree?
I believe it used to be a requirement when I was applying, when I initially first started applying for Facebook, but we took it away because we realized and made our teams more diverse if we hire for different backgrounds. And I realize now, like, when I work with my team, they're not looking at me for advice in coding. Like, I am, if they are, then there's definitely a problem. they're looking to me to, I have to understand what they're talking about in terms of, and be able to have intelligent conversation with them. But it's not, I'm not there because I am the best coder. It's definitely not a hard and fast requirement, and I certainly don't have a CS degree.
Good.
So I'm actually a UX design student, and I want to hear your perspective and what makes a good UX designer.
I mean, so, when I look at kind of my team, I really think about, the question was, what makes a great UX designer? So you're from a UX student. So, you know, I would say for me, the biggest thing is, you know, I kind of think about my immediate team as kind of the PM, eng lead, and UX lead. And we're kind of a trio that works together to figure out what is the best thing for the product and how are we going to get it done. So I really love a UX designer who's kind of a real partner in the development process, that we can bounce ideas off of each other, that we can brainstorm, that we can really try to think about, okay, where do we want to go? Where are we going next? And how do we get there together? So someone who's like a real partner to me tends to be my favorite type of designer to work with.
Somebody who likes talking to people, so getting in the shoes of the user, doing as much UX research as possible. I think that's been key for me for all the UX designers that I worked with. And then always being in the details, right? So thinking through all the possible scenarios that could go right and could go wrong. I actually thought of another one. Thinking about delight as you go, right? So there is probably, it's not on top of the engineer's mind. And I've noticed UX designers who are very delightful focused will sprinkle delight in their product, and that's very much a bonus.
We have time for two more questions. So,
you mentioned that Facebook removed the CS degree requirement to foster more diversity. Do you guys have any advice for someone who's perhaps the only woman on their team who wants to kind of encourage that kind of thinking?
You're currently the only one. Okay, got it. So the question is, she's the only woman on her team, and she wants to bring more diversity to her team. What can you tell me more about what? Oh, okay. Yeah. It's okay.
But just if any advice in general for women who don't experience the kind of community that having other women on their team.
Recruit your friends. Recruit people from this event.
I think that, like, generally, and I shared this before, like, leaders are really important because they set this model of, like, what, and they set the culture for the team. And I think, like, if you're looking around you and you find that, like, your leader is not somebody who you would necessarily want to follow, like, I would question that a bit, because I want to, like, I would follow my leader anywhere. Like, she is someone, like, I would follow to the edge and back. And, like, even if I were, like, if I thought my project were just completely exploding, end of the world, like, I would trust that she would help me and figure out, like, what I need to do to make it right again. I'm not sure in terms of diversity if I have a better answer for you than that, if one of you really try.
I mean, so I find there's typically, I see kind of two different ways this is, that this kind of manifests. One is the people care about it in theory, but no one is doing anything about it situation. And then there's the kind of like slightly more toxic cultures where there's, you know, some, no, this is not a problem. You know, if you're in the latter, those I think are pretty hard situations and you should look at, you know, whether that is a culture that you want to be a part of. But if you're in one of the places where everyone's like, yeah, we should think about that. Right. You know, it kind of sucks, but a lot of times the burden, you know, if you take that up as a, you know, a personal project or something that you really want to change, you'll often get support. And so talking to the lead of your team, talking to other people in the group that might be sympathetic and saying, hey, I want to, you know, we should do a college outreach or we should do, you know, this networking event or, you know, I have, you know, for our next round for someone hiring someone, why don't we try to, you know, make sure we interview an equal number of men and women for the role and just these small things that you can kind of push on and, you know, give people easy ways to contribute to the problem. And I think you'll get a lot of enthusiasm. Like, you know, sometimes that barrier of, okay, I'm going, someone has to step up and do it. And it's unfortunate that the burden often falls to the, you know, the one woman on the team or whatever it is, but you can absolutely make a difference.
Just voicing it. A lot of times people just don't notice the diversity is missing and it's shocking. Mm-hmm. So voicing that and saying that this should be a priority, but then also using the network. So this is a great network. There's women in product. There's so many great ways to meet other women and then encouraging them to apply to your company.
I have one more thing to add. There was an engineer at Pinterest who also noticed that there was a diversity problem within the engineering org at Pinterest, and she actually like made it public in terms of the number of female engineers there were. I think a lot of other companies followed suit, and I think they realized then like, hey, like actually this is really low. This is not something like, I think again they didn't realize it before. Maybe they did, but like benefit of the doubt, I think a lot of companies just don't think about it. And like in terms of perhaps it's like a funnel problem in terms of the number of people coming in through the top. Like if you have so many more applicants who are male coming in, it's like a little bit harder sometimes. A lot of times also there's a bias problem in terms of like people who are like them, and it's this unconscious bias. I think it's like first recognizing that there is a bias is really important.
One last question, guys.
Thank you so much for the panel. My question would be, how do you decide the priorities on should they work features to add on your
Good question. I haven't quite figured that one out completely. It's a moving target. I think in terms of priorities, it is one, like, and I don't come from an engineering background, so it's really important for me to understand if we were to, like, first, like, what's the whole list of things that we can do? How does this fit into our overall vision and our strategy and what we want for the product? And then, like, after that, okay, how much eng work does this require? Like, if we're going to be there, this will require like 3 months of our entire eng team working on this to move the needle this much. Like, it's probably not worth it. So I think figuring out what your goal is really important. How, like, making sure that your team is aligned on what goal you're trying to reach and figuring out, okay, now we have a goal and this is how it fits into our vision and strategy. How do we move the needle on this goal? And what is, like, what can we do to push that goal forward? And then weighing like how much effort each of the things you could possibly do could take. Yeah, easier said than done. Way easier said than done.
I think having a ruthless prioritization mindset. So somebody today told me, hey, I was looking at your product and it has a bunch of these call to actions. Why do you even have that? And I have 50 such things that I want to improve in our product. But what you have to do is always be the person saying, okay, I'm responsible for the engineering productivity. And 1 month from now, what do I have to show for myself? If we move the call to actions around, is it really going to move the needle? Or should we be focused on something else? So keep your eye on the prize.
Anything else,
Jen? I think for me, it's really having a really clear metric for the team to drive towards. I think that brings a lot of clarity in terms of what we should prioritize, because then you can look at things and say, how much does this cost? What's the impact going to be? And you can kind of prioritize on that. I really like forcing the team to do a stack rank and not just saying like, oh yeah, these like seven things are P1s. Like, no, let's order them. And you know, if we had to draw the line after four, where would you draw that line? And kind of going through those little bit scarcity exercises, I think brings a lot of clarity to what you're building and trying to say like, nope, we're going to put these in a list. We actually did that with the entire Maps roadmap for the year. We had like 100 things on a whiteboard and stack ranked them. And it was really, really clarifying.
Thank you, guys. I think with that, we close the Q&A, but our panelists will stick around for more questions for a few minutes. So please feel free to like reach out to them after, maybe, if you have to leave soon.